Ambassador Abinales of the U.S. Army War College. We're heading to Venezuela, New World Report. The headline from Caracas. No reason, quote, for opposition talks to go on unless funds are released, according to a Venezuelan official. The background on this is lengthy. However, we'll get to what we can say, that the opposition that would be in exile, at one point led by the former leader of the legislature, Guaido, but now led by three members, former lawmakers who are in exile, I believe in Spain, are said to be entering into talks with the Venezuelan government. And yet, the headline follows with this story. The head of the Venezuela government's negotiating team in its talks with the country's opposition said there was no reason to return to dialogue if the government's opponents do not, quote, return frozen foreign assets. Professor, the tangle here is the Maduro government looks to be in control of this conversation, and the opposition looks to have no leverage whatsoever. Is that accurate? And how does the U.S. weigh into this mix of opinion?
That is accurate, John. And frankly, and these were issues when I was on policy planning staff, Secretary Pompeo, that we dealt with regularly at the question of what is the nature of the Venezuelan regime, and based on your understanding of what is the nature of, what's the appropriate way to deal with it. And for me, the underlying characteristic is the essentially, you know, criminal exploitative structure of that Maduro, Diosdado Cabello, Jorge Rodriguez, Delcy Rodriguez, the people that are around them. And so the question is, is the idea of negotiation sincere? And, can you get democratic, real democratic concessions from, negotiating or raising pressure? And, for many of us, the answer was long no. And that was why a number of U.S. administration initiatives, especially by Juan Gonzalez, the NSC director for Latin America and others, was so controversial, to try to negotiate for oil, to try to negotiate for the release of hostages, the prisoner exchange where we gave back, convicted narcos in exchange for U.S. hostages. And so what's happened now on the Venezuelan side is that they've lost a big amount of their negotiating power, especially with the disappearance or the dethroning of Juan Guaido as the de jure president. And so no surprise, the tables have now turned. I'm seeing kind of the U.S. desperation for getting to the bargaining table instead of the Maduro trying to say, okay, this is what I'm willing to offer to get sanctions against me released, to get the sanctions against some of the people in judicial investigations lifted. Now the tables are turned. It's Maduro and his elite, including Jorge Rodriguez, the point man, who is doing the demanding, saying, well, now if you don't give us the money back, which was rightfully seized, then we're not going to go to the negotiating table. And so I think it really illustrates that in the absence of any real leverage, that the essentially de facto criminal regime with no real opposition and no pressure is frankly just playing with us. I mean, you saw it in the same when you had the naming of three relatively unknown replacements, the triumvirate to replace Juan Guaido, and immediately the Maduro de facto regime announced criminal charges against them, and so it's the leverage that democratic forces is evaporating quickly, just as it's evaporated, unfortunately, in Nicaragua and elsewhere in the region.
You mentioned Venezuela before because it is a part of the tragedy in Colombia, the fluid border back and forth. I want to pay attention to that border because I understand that it's a source of much disruption, a lot of narco-terrorism, but also bad actors from outside. I believe in the reporting mentioning, say, China's surveillance technology, even Russian trainers. It's all quite fantastic. But is the new president in Bogota, Mr. Petro, who's associated with left of center, reopening the border, reopening diplomatic relations with Caracas, is he a stabilizing influence in the region? Is his conversation with Maduro likely to lead to a brighter future rather than a darker future? We have a couple of minutes, Professor.
Well, I don't think Petro is quite as really far to the left as many people have feared. However, Petro likes to hear himself speak. And frankly, the actions that he has taken are destabilizing for both Colombia and Venezuela. The border between Colombia and Venezuela was long time an economic zone, places where people were born and traveled back and forth for shopping, for other reasons, had relatives, etc. And so there was a logic to wanting to reopen the border and restore that relationship. Unfortunately, because you have so many different criminal groups that we've talked about on the border, and in a flourishing criminal economy, with a cocaine economy, with a mining economy, other things, the FARC, the Segundo Mercatalia, the ELN, the Gulf Clan, etc., opening the border really facilitates those criminal flows. And as you also pointed out, in many ways, Petro's not trying to build an axis with Maduro, but wanting to reopen Maduro and let him back into the fold. That in many ways legitimizes and helps Maduro farther consolidate his power, not only politically, but also economically, because those border flows, both licit and illicit, also, help the viability of his economy and paying off his key supporters. And so strengthening Maduro, strengthening organized crime ties, that hurts both Colombia and Venezuela. And it expands the amount of drugs and other things that flow out of the country.